The Oldie Lunch Recordings presents Quentin Letts talking about his book, The Speaker's Wife, brought to you by Doro, number one in the senior mobile market.
I was thinking about life. You should remember what you have got, not what you haven't got. What you have got. I've got tinnitus. I'm moving on. Our final speaker is a polymath. From politics to theatre, he treads a path, but not today. He is now in a church, where he will typically and diligently search inside the core of a cleric whose life unravels. His story tellingly travels a journey as a life collapses. Enough! Once more my poem lyrically lapses. Your MC now gladly lets the floor to Quentin. Quentin Letts.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Barry. Ladies and gentlemen, the next poet laureate, I think he'd be very much better than the incumbent, would he not? You know, everyone always says that they want to make poetry relevant. Actually, if we wanted to make poetry relevant, the poet laureate really should be Pam Ayres. It would be a belter if that happened. It's a bit odd to be at an oldie lunch without dear old Terry Wogan here, and my goodness, what a great man he was, that sort of slow-wheeling chaos of Terry. So let's just say a big cheer for Terry. The other thing about these Simpsons lunches is that they are incredibly heavy. So I need to, the advice I need to give you, no swimming, children, for the next 2 hours. And although I've been on a keep fit routine, the Daily Mail sent me off to do 2 months with David Cameron's trainer, a man called Matt Roberts. And every two times a week I had to go to this man for complete torture. And I can tell you that David Cameron's trainer is very interested in buttocks. You've always been told to clench your glutes. And so if we hear, next time we're passing Downing Street, we hear a cry of bottoms, 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 it's not that Peter Mandelson is visiting. It is, ladies and gentlemen, Matt Roberts in operation. The book I've written is called The Speaker's Wife. It's a novel. It is not about Sally Berko. So it's not being... And I don't just say that because I fear there may be a libel lawyer here. But it's not about Sally. But, dear old Sally, she's got a bad reputation, has she not? And she's earned it. She has got a bad reputation. We all take the mickey out of Sally. You know, how she managed to have an affair with someone even less attractive than her husband, I don't know. And it was her cousin. It was the man's cousin. But do we not actually, if you think about poor Sally, even though we all laugh at her, actually, I got thinking about it, and I thought that probably underneath it, she's probably rather a pitiable creature. And so that's a little bit of a hint about the Speaker's wife in my book. And then you think about political spouses, and what effect does Sally Berko have on John Berko? Why is John Berko such a raging little bantam? Why is he so very cross about life? He kicks down doors, he screams and shouts at people. There must be something going on at home, or perhaps there's something not going on at home, that the reason he's like that. Then you think about other political spouses. You think about poor Nancy Reagan. Well, she was amazing, wasn't she? With her astrology and all that, it explains a lot. You think about Norma Major, how she put up with John. Do you know the Telegraph's arts man, auctions man, Godfrey Barker? He had an affair with Edwina Curry before John Major. They were back at university, and he came up with a memorable saying about Edwina that she kisses like a can opener. I thought that's blimey. Oh. How could John Major? There was a woman called Marion Pearson, who was the wife of a Canadian Prime Minister, Lester Pearson, and she came up with the expression that behind every successful man is a surprised woman. And anyway, so you think a bit about political spouses. So that was one of my little... the opening of the book. There we are in a quiet London street on a Sunday. Bang! Suddenly, a bloke in a car drives through the window of a Pakistani airline. And he's a young lad, and he's very angry because his girlfriend has been sent off to Pakistan to do an arranged marriage. This is a cause that a lot of people in Britain feel very angry about. And I tell you, he's making an anti-Islamic protest, this lad. And a lot of people would support that, probably, because arranged marriages are a dastardly business. Anyway, he legs it for safety. The police are chasing after him. Sunday morning... And he sees this young lad in the distance. He sees outside an evangelical church a small knot of congregants coming out of the church. And he goes up to them, has a chat with them, then he zips into the church and he takes sanctuary in the church. Actually, this happened in 1980. This happened, you may remember, a Tamil protester called Viraj Mendes took sanctuary in a church in Manchester. Eventually, the police barged the door down and arrested him. But what would happen today? I don't know. If an anti-Islamic protester took sanctuary in an evangelical church, what would happen? I've got a suspicion that the evangelicals would give that person sanctuary. I've got a suspicion that the Islamic community would be outraged. And I've got a suspicion also that the politicians would get involved, that they would interfere. And Parliament would start looking at the whole establishment of the church, the whole business of who owns church lands. And it would be possible, would it not, ladies and gentlemen, for a single politician to seize on this issue and to make some running with it and say that this politician wanted to be Speaker of the House of Commons and politicize the speakership of the House of Commons. And this happens in my book. And the person who becomes speaker in my book is a scurvy little hobgoblin, about 5 foot tall, who... Now, obviously, this is a ludicrous scenario, and no such person could ever become speaker. The main character in my book isn't so much the wife of the speaker as the chaplain of the speaker, and this allows me to bang on about my favourite subject, which is the Book of Common Prayer. Here it is, tremendous little book, an inch thick at most, and the most important expression of Englishness that exists outside Shakespeare. And I stand up for the dear old BCP, I stand up for hymns ancient and modern, and I implore the Church of England, which I belong to get back to some of the aesthetic beauty of its services and get away from these dreadful happy-clappy services. Let us all stand up and sing Abide With Me. And the other thing that drove me to write this book is ghosts. There are some ghosts in the book. I've heard a ghost. We live in an old mill in Herefordshire, which has been there since Doomsday Book. 150 years ago, the miller died. He fell into the workings of the mill and had his neck snapped. And it must have been a horrible way to go. His wife ran up the hill to get help. By the time she came back, he was a goner. And anyway, two summers ago, top of the garden, I was pruning a rose, and to get to this rose high up, I stood on a wobbly chair, a stupid thing to do, and it was really, you should never do that. But the chair was wobbling away, no one nearby. My wife was about 50, 60 yards away, and suddenly I heard this woman's voice say, "Don't fall off, don't fall off." And I looked around, absolutely no one there. And I promised you on my late father's soul that I heard that voice. And I believe, it was an extraordinary moment for me because it wasn't scary. It was just a bit perplexing. And as a result, I have no doubt at all that there is something there. I don't know what it is, but there is undoubtedly something. What would happen, though, ladies and gentlemen, if there were ghosts in a churchyard? Imagine a classic English country churchyard late at night with the ashes creaking and with the leaves crackling and with the graveyard gate squeaking on its hinges. What would happen were Richard Dawkins to walk through that graveyard? Would he be scared? Would the great maestro of reason and a rational thought, what would happen? I bet you it would give him the willies. And I bet you that the hairs on his neck would stand up. And that says to me that there is something innate in us. There is something beyond reason. And there is something deep in us that is ready to believe. And so I'm doing a bit of that in this novel as well. But there's a lot of Parliament in it. There's a lot of skullduggery. There's a lot of greasing. There's a lot of the sort of things that go on at Westminster every day. And what we lack, what we perhaps lack in our politics, is this not fair, is belief. There's too much sycophancy, and there are too many jobs being given by Cameron to people just on the basis of what they're going to do on Europe at the moment. And it's really bad what's going on in our politics at the moment with a ghastly man, Philip Hammond, Foreign Secretary changing his mind, and another bloke called Mark Pritchard has changed his mind just soon after being given a wonderful freebie where he goes to Strasbourg for about 5 weeks a year in top-class hotels and can take a girlfriend. This is outrageous. I'm not making it up. Absolutely true. Look it up. And so I think we need to get back in our politics to an area where people believe. But we have Jeremy Corbyn. And actually, although the Mail keeps on bashing away at Corbyn and I'm joining in like mad, there is something admirable about Jeremy Corbyn in that he does believe and he's prepared to resist the terrible clichés of modern politics. And let me tell you about something about Corbyn. He's got an eye for the ladies. He has. How he's got away with it all these years of belonging to the Islington Women's Collective, I don't know. But the other day, I mean, we all know about him going off into East Germany with Diane Abbott on the back of his motorbike in the 90s. I hope he had a puncture repair kit. We know why he appointed Emily Thornberry, because she's very posh and she's got a voice as deep as Windsor Davis. But there's this woman called, there's a Labour frontbencher now called Vicky Foxcroft, who's never done anything in her life, really. She's quite slinky. And the sketch writers have all called her Vicky Foxtrot, of course. But Vicky Foxcroft is her name. And I caught Corbyn the other day giving her the old up and down, absolutely outrageous sexist behaviour. And Foxcroft she's got a voice like a sea lion. And she gave a speech the other day about votes at 16, which she was very keen on. And she was very keen on the idea, she said, she wanted 16-year-olds to be given access to the ballot box. But it came out wrong. And she said she wanted 16-year-olds to have access to the bollock box. And I thought, it says it all when someone, you know, sketch writers just should give up. One quick thing about Boris before I go. Boris does believe in Brexit. It's unfair. He does believe in that. Being Boris, he's like a sausage dog crossing a road. In one direction is going a bitch on heat. So his undercarriage is getting interested in that. And then his snout is following the person in front who's got a whole load of bacon in their shopping. And that was Cameron offering him jobs. And the bitch on heat was the Eurosceptic vote. The sausage dog was getting longer and longer. Eventually he had to make up his mind. And the sausage dog sort of has come together in the middle. But he does believe in it. And I'm an old friend of Boris. And he's done me a good turn. Let me tell you what the good turn was. We had a common friend in Paris, and I went to stay with this friend in Paris, and my little boy, aged 6 at the time, left behind the important part of his Incredible Hulk toy, which was the back bit. The front bit was the big green bit, but on the back was a box which made all the noise. This was the noise, sort of... No, the aggressive war noise. And it was a disaster. We left this bit behind. And so when I got back to London, I telephoned my friend Philip and said, help, we've left behind the Incredible Hulk's war bit. And Philip said, don't worry, because Boris is staying with him at the moment. He'll bring it back. And Boris did, very decently, and brought it back. And we arranged to meet in the House of Commons. And he handed it over to me. But being Boris, he's so bloody clumsy. As he handed it over, he pressed the button. And standing next to us at the time was this policeman with a Heckler & Koch machine gun. And suddenly... And Boris very nearly got me shot, but even worse, at that very moment, David Blunkett was walking past with his dog and thought he was under attack. So have I got time just to a quick list? What will we miss? Is Brexit going to... Shall I shut up? What's going to happen, ladies and gentlemen, about Brexit? I rather hope it happens because it would cause maximum chaos, and that's great for sketch writing. But think of the things. Could we bear it? Could we bear Brexit? Think of the things we would miss. And I've done a little list, as Peter Lilly once said disastrously at the Tory party conference. And here it is. We would have, if we did Brexit, we would have a life without the Lisbon Treaty, the Rome Treaty, communiques, metrication, bolster pillows, Schengen, blue stars on our number plates, which drive me mad. We'd have to do without Angela Merkel's pudding bowl haircut, ever closer union, QMV, motorcades, all these things we would miss. The Bureau of European Policy Advisors, which is a sort of Brussels equivalent of a trade union for special advisors. The acquis communautaire, we'd have to do without additionality, whatever that might be. The CAP, the CFP, fish discards, summits, motorcades, Delors, Barroso, Tusk, and Schultz, Ortolan, raw steak, all these things are going to go, derogation, cohesion funds, modalities, comitology, excessive debt procedures, President Hollande's wandering doigt, harmonization procedures, they're not the same thing, François, at all, high representatives, and they often are high, we would have to do without subsidiarity, rapporteurs, EU accounts, whatever they might be, Strasbourg, Brussels, doing that hokey-cokey. We'd have to do without Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. We'd have to do without Juncker's fourth bottle, the European arrest warrant, Lord Hannay, Lord Mandelson, Lady Ashton, and the whole Kinnock family. Could we cope? We couldn't. So let's do Brexit. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Quentin. Oh, boy. Not since Doddy. That was wonderful. Three speakers. Let's have a round of applause for all three.
The Oldie Magazine Recordings. This is a Radio Gorgeous production for The Oldie 2015.